Welcome to Conversations with Friends, a space for slow, unplanned, and deeply human conversations. I'm Linda, a German in my early 30s, a traveler who has spent more than 5 years exploring the world. And I'm talking to my friend Marco, an Italian in his late 60s, an artist who chose a simple life on the beautiful island of La Gomera after living many different lives across the world. Two friends from different generations, different worlds, coming together to explore what it means to be alive, curious, and connected. We couldn't be more different, and that's exactly why we meet here, as friends across generations to share our thoughts, questions, and stories. Nothing is scripted. We don't know where the conversation will lead, only that it will be real, honest, and rooted in what moves us. This is Conversations with Friends. That was beautiful. Thank you.
Hi, Linda.
Hi, Marco.
What do you feel like talking about today?
I didn't think about it for a second.
Mm-hmm.
I always trusted that we will be guided in the right direction and that the right things will come up. So I never plan anything and I feel totally blank right now. But realizing this is such a big thing for me because usually I'm so well prepared. I mean, I'm well prepared in case of I have the microphones and they're charged and stuff like this, but such an interesting experience that I don't even feel like I have to prepare something, some topic we could talk about. I just trust it so much. It's great. I'm a new person.
That's so good to hear.
Do you have anything you want to talk about?
There are a number of things I can feel pressing, but they're not clear. But one thing for sure is that what you just said about trusting, not feeling the need to prepare, is an awfully good sign. Because I've come to the point where I only really trust things that have not been prepared.
Because they're so raw and pure?
Because they are innocent. You know, there is no manipulation behind their appearance. It's inspiration can only is only or inspiration only can be responsible. And so I trust it. But having said that, I know that at some point I'd like to talk to you and with you about relationships.
That's a great topic.
And sex.
That's great too.
And But somehow I'm not sure. I don't want to push it, because as much as I'm looking forward to it, I want it to be at the right time. And to be perfectly honest, right now, today, as we sit here recording, I'm not at my most romantic self. How about you?
Well, I've never thought about my most romantic self. Yeah, I also don't feel very romantic today.
No, I'm afraid that it would come out too didactic, you know, too dry, too conceptual, rather than experienced in the moment.
Yeah. No, I truly feel about all the topics that they should only come up when we feel the total urge to say something about it. Not because we have the feeling it's an interesting topic and we should talk about it now.
Yep. Well, let's fish closer to experience. What I've been thinking about today has been about what I mentioned to you, that we are riding through a moment of change between one sign of the zodiac and the next. And these two signs, the contrast between them is significant, between the warmth, the expressiveness of Leo, the enthusiastic spontaneity of Leo. And it's interesting that we decided on this project in Leo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're going public.
Oh, that's a perfect fit, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I didn't think about it, but it does fit. And from there, we are moving to the much more service-oriented, health-oriented, self-demanding sign of precise Virgo.
Mm.
And I can feel something of a switch taking place. It's not clear and obvious, but it's underway. And I was thinking that if there is truth behind astrology, which is in per se a question mark, but if there is truth, then it doesn't just affect me, it affects everyone.
Mm. Yeah.
The whole of nature.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
And so it would be relevant to speak about it, because more than just the two of us would be making this transition as we speak.
Yeah. I mean, you have way more knowledge about astrology than I do, and you explain so much to me and still do. Like, almost every time we meet, you bring something up that's going on in astrology right now and that affects us, and I always think it's so interesting. But even though I don't have the knowledge and I'm not looking it up, I can just feel it in my relationships, in a way of how I'm in touch with people, because most of my friends are so far away all the time, and we're in touch, but not maybe on a daily basis. With some, yes, but with others, no. And still, when I update my friends about my life and they update me about theirs, it's so interesting that we're living like totally different lives, but then still I have the feeling we're somehow connected in, let's say, collective rhythms, topics that come up in everyone at the same time, problems that show themselves and then want to be resolved at the same time. And even though I didn't talk to a friend for weeks, when we update each other, we're like, wow, it showed in your life, obviously, like in a totally different way, but it was the same pattern. And this is what makes me sort of believe in it. I'm not very much into astrology, like reading astrological charts and stuff, because also I don't want it to be working like a self-fulfilling prophecy. I don't want to read the chart of, let's say, the next week, the next month, and be like, oh, this is going to happen. Oh, I will be having a bad day on this day and stuff like this. You know, I don't want that. But every time I'm going through something and then you're bringing something up or I talk to my friends, it's just such a relief to feel like, oh, maybe it's not me that is wrong. Maybe there's something higher going on that affects me.
I get it. I think the biggest danger of astrology is that people use it in such a way as to auto-define their own future experience, sort of thing. And I think that's really dangerous, like you said.
Yeah.
You know. Let's start with the assumption that there's no such thing as a bad day.
Great.
They're all good. Every single one. Different.
Yeah, some are more challenging, maybe, but that's not necessarily bad, right?
Exactly.
I had this feeling this morning, because yesterday I had quite a challenging day. Just the day didn't flow so easily. And I really had to do a lot of like inner work to calm myself down and just be in acceptance. Like being in acceptance for how the day went yesterday was work. And it felt heavy and I was unsatisfied with it. And then I went to sleep. I woke up this morning and life felt a bit easier. And then I was sitting there this morning having my coffee and just realizing I did some small steps yesterday. When I had like heavy feelings, I remembered what you told me before to accept my feelings and allow them in. And I realized that I surrendered into this complicated day a bit more. Like, for example, I allowed myself to take a very long nap. I allowed myself to have like a very easy afternoon where I just watched an episode of my series and had like very comforting food. And then I let go of all the things I thought I should have done, like work and stuff. And instead, I decided to bake something, for example, because I felt like it. So in the end of the day, I realized, not that it's about productivity, but I realized, oh, I did things that suited me on this specific day, even though it was not the things I had planned for this day. But I couldn't see it yesterday. I realized it this morning, and then I felt happy about it. And I was like, oh, it still felt heavy yesterday. But I think I did it better than I did before, than I did on other days. And then I realized, oh, sometimes we need these challenging days so that we can grow, so that we can learn acceptance. Because it's not hard to accept a beautiful, easygoing, flowy day. Like, I can accept this every day. But if we have a challenging day and we learn to accept it a bit more, this is a huge step and a big win. And we need those bad days, or there are no bad days, let's say complicated, challenging days, to learn to accept them more so that we can grow out of it. This was my realization this morning, and I was so happy about it.
Yeah. That's wonderful. All these little things, they are such huge steps forward, I think. It's like, let's for a moment analyze what makes a day, in inverted commas, bad, and what makes a day good. So let's say that probably a good day is one in which lots of positive things happen. And a, in inverted commas, bad day is one in which not much happens and it's a bit blah, blasé, and we're left with a sense of incompleteness or, yeah, slight dissatisfaction. I mean, there are such things as bad days when an accident might happen or something of the sort, but they're rare. The majority of what we call bad days are actually There's nothing wrong with them.
Yeah.
It's just a mood or a reaction that we have to a lack of stimulation, or what we wanted didn't quite happen. We didn't get that response that we had expected or had hoped for. And I'm going to postulate something now. That observing nature, the great teacher, it would be as if it seems to me that as human beings we expect the impossible to happen. In other words, for every day to be the same, or to have the same qualities.
The best qualities.
The best, of course. The sun must always shine. But we know very well, observing nature, that rainy days are absolutely necessary for the fulfillment of a plant. And if we were plants, then let's imagine that what we call a bad, emotionally rainy day is needed for our growth and development. And not just our growth and developments, but the growth and developments of our ideas, of our projects, of our goals, of the healthy fulfillment of everything that is in our worlds requires what we judge as negative feelings. It is as if, as human beings, I sometimes think we assume that we were a magic orange tree that always had ripe orange fruits on it all year round for us to pick, where we know very well that there is a cycle.
Yeah.
And it takes a year, except in this climate. In this climate, we get fruits a lot more often.
But still there are cycles, even in this climate. But
there's still cycles. And this morning I planted some new things in the garden. Salvia, which is sage.
Yeah.
And artichokes.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, wrong season to plant them, but I thought, yeah, why not? Let's try. And some peas. Oh, well, I love peas. Now the peas, if everything goes well, I will begin to see them pop out of the ground in about 10 days.
Oh, that's fast.
Yeah. The sage, I don't know, because I've never planted them before. So it'll be a curious surprise when it happens. And artichokes, also the first time, so I don't know. But I suspect that they take longer because they are, I'm not sure, I don't think they're perennial. In other words, I don't think they last all for hundreds of years, but they last for several seasons. One plant continues to bear fruit year after year for a few years. And so it may be that its germination time is longer. But the point is that it seems to be that in our lives we almost expect, like, the artichoke to be fully mature tomorrow.
We do.
Because we don't see ourselves really as part of nature.
Yeah, that's true.
We see ourselves as something in charge.
Yeah.
That we are the boss and we define and decide.
Yeah, and we think if we try really hard,
yeah,
we are possible to experience whatever, the bloom, full bloom, all year round. This is as if we would tell the orange tree, if it doesn't have fruit, you didn't try hard enough.
Yeah. And I think that we are always trying to, we plant seeds and then we try to dig them up to see if the roots are actually sprouting,
mm-hmm.
you know, and in digging it up, we screw it up,
yeah.
you know, we kill the process.
So it all comes back to trust again.
It has to be allowed to stay there mm. in the dark, still, untouched for long enough. And we have to learn those processes to tend the garden inside ourselves in the same way. So assume that the emotions that you're experiencing are perfect, always. Assume that everything is perfect.
Mm.
That's the safest way to do it. And it's the best way to provide the water and the atmosphere and the care required for the seeds to actually grow healthy,
mm.
is to assume that it's perfect. I've thought many times that if human pregnancy was external, man, we'd screw it up. The only reason why we do that without cocking it up really badly is because we can't see what's going on.
Mm.
We can't see the fetus. We can't judge it. We can't say, oh my God, hang on a second, his fingers are too long. What about his toenails? They haven't grown yet. Oh my God. Thank God we can't do that. And in fact, the more medicine advances and we're able to hear and get x-rays and scans and God knows what, unfortunately, the more opportunities we have to somehow intervene.
Mm.
And I think it's next 9 times out of 10, we're more likely to make a mistake than to help things along by intervening.
Mm.
And the other thing that I was thinking of is the example of this magnificent podcast of ours, which, as you reminded me the last time we spoke, we only thought of a week ago.
Yeah.
That tells me that when a fruit is ripe, there's almost nothing you can do to hold it back.
Mm.
You know, when something grows and grows and grows healthily, and that sort of friendship does,
mm-hmm.
it makes things grow healthily. When something emerges, it needs no manipulation, it needs no trying, it needs no pushing, it needs no massive efforts happens.
Yeah, and probably most of the time, nothing great can be born from pressure. Like, if we would have sat down 2 weeks before and decided, we're going to do a project now.
Let's design it.
Whatever. I don't know what we have would have created, but it's not this, you know?
Yeah. So, if we are moving from expressive, enthusiastic, self-promoting Leo into service-oriented, conscientious, precise, perfectionist Virgo, and if there's some truth behind that, and I'm not suggesting there is, I'm suggesting if then I would imagine that our emotional atmosphere is changing into one that is more, slightly more introspective, slightly more demanding of our attention to precision projects, to how we do things. How present am I when I wash the dishes? How in the moment am I when I do the chores? When I brush my teeth? When I do the simple things of everyday life? When I sweep the floor? How joyfully am I expressing my ability to serve without the need for the self-gratification that Leo automatically provides? That would require an adjustment to a different emotional climate. And my observation is that that's what's happening to me right now, an adjustment to a different emotional climate. Don't know it yet, but for sure it has to be based on self-love. Because Virgo can become, or the shadow side of Virgo is, or tends to manifest a kind of self-whipping. I'm not good enough, I'm not precise enough, I'm not ambitious enough, I'm not enough of anything. That's the shadow side of Virgo. It tends to highlight the gaps, what we perceive are gaps in ourselves, where we don't quite match our self-image. And obviously spending a month doing that is no fun. So the inspiration has to be brought back to earth with more intensified self-love. No, Marco, you're right. You're perfectly capable of doing this. Just stay in the moment. Don't let this self-flagellation take you away from the sweeping, the dishwashing, the little things that have to get done. Throw your spirit into it, and with gratitude, and you will see that without concern for the final result, it will be perfect. As long as you're paying attention to the moment, not to a projected outcome. So that's what I've been thinking of. Perhaps a bit too much for the majority of people. I track weird things. Yeah.
But that sounds really beautiful. Yeah. Just the thought of putting that much love into everything and attention into everything, this level of presence.
Yeah. It is. And the reason I pay attention to astrology is because it gives me a kind of a roadmap for that creative process that works in the background, you know, entering Virgo next month, entering Libra, a very social, balanced place in which the first 6 months, because the year, the astrological year begins with Aries.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And the first six signs are very involved with the self. Aries, which is the primordial energy that begins everything in spring. And then Taurus, which is our embodiment, our sense of being in our bodies, in nature, and able to perceive the different ways life manifests through us in a physical way. Into Germany, which is the emergence of mental curiosity and a thought and intellectual appreciation. Beyond that, to cancer, which is the heart and the home in which our emotions are explored, our hearts, our ability, depth of our love, the roots that bind us to the core of all things, but still individual.
Mm.
From there into Leo, which is the externalization of the self as king and queen. Into Virgo, the humble servant, the time of harvesting. September. And what leads into the next 6 months, which are how we fit with the other, or with the world of populated by others. So the next sign is Libra, the sign of balance, in which relationships are perceived for the first time. Oh, how do I get on with this external essence and person, and where can I find balance between the obvious differences? He or she is not the same as me. How do I get to understand them without losing myself? And yet finding that point between us where harmony exists. Beyond that, I'm not going to go through all the months, but the next months continue to emerge in a more societal sense of the cycle outworking. And so I like astrology in that sense, in the sense that as a roadmap that might remind me of what my emotions are reflecting at this time of year, but not as an imposition of this is how I should feel, or this is how I'm supposed to. No, stay away from that, and stay away from trying to foresee the future, whether or not I'm going to win a lottery ticket or whatever the heck it is that people want, because that's where, you know, it's not only, the outcome will not only be wrong, your predictions will not be right, but it also takes you away from the present moment, which is the whole secret of life. And the most wonderful thing is to actually look at the night sky and connect with stars and planets and build a personal relationship with them, so that it's not something you read in a horoscope. It's your own personal experience with Mars. Mars begins to talk to us, and Venus and Jupiter. And everyone else, the moon, of course. And that is a subjective personal relationship with the cosmos that is so enriching.
That's so beautiful. Did you find this connection here? Or did you have it before?
What I had before was curiosity. But this is where I explored it in real terms. You saw the place where I used to live?
Yeah.
You saw that it has a balcony that overlooks the ocean.
So beautiful.
And the direction in which it looks is direct west. So I used to sit in that balcony at night And suddenly I realized, because I could recognize it every night, that the planets are always going in the same direction from one side of the sky to the other. Mm-hmm. All appear to come from the east and set in the west, just mm-hmm. like the sun.
Mm-hmm.
But so does everyone else yeah. in the solar system.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh yeah, that's because the solar system is like rotating on a plane. It's not like an atom with the electrons going around in every which way around the sphere, which is the sun. No.
No, it has a very strict order, right?
Huh?
It has a very strict order.
And very strict geometry. Mm. You know, what's called the ecliptic is a plane, like a plate, around the sun. And all the planets are at various points on that plate. And they're all going from east to west. And our own rotation of the Earth around its own axis is east to west. So everything is moving in the whole solar system east to west, except for a couple of anomalies, which nobody knows why. But everything is going in the same direction, ordered. At different speeds, at different distances from the sun, but all on the same plane.
Mm.
And so, of course, when I watch them, they're going, every day they're going along the same, same highway.
I also saw this especially when I used to sleep outside, when I was camping, or also sometimes here I sleep outside, or when I sleep in a cave, and then I sometimes realize that it's such a gift to be able to do something, to live a life where you can sit under the stars for hours so that you can even see it. I think I saw a little, very short movie that someone took of like a night sky, and this was when I saw the stars moving, or let's say the planet moving, whatever, you see the stars moving, sort of. I saw it for the first time when I was beginning of my 20s, and I was like, what? This is how it looks? I mean, I've been outside at night, for sure, but I just never watched it for such a long time. And now it's such a natural part of my life to do it, not every night, but I've done it many times, and I will do it many times. And I have the same thing about just a pure sunset, for example, or also a sunrise, where I sometimes think, this happens every day, and there's so many days where we don't watch it. Or when I used to live a totally different life from the life I'm living now, I never watched it. Like, I never had the time to watch it, or I didn't have a place to watch it because I was living in a city or something like this. And this is one of the things that make my life so beautiful, to, it's weird, but to have the option of watching sunsets, sometimes watching sunrises, and watching the stars move, and be so connected to it, and have the time and space for this. That's such a beautiful thing.
Yeah. It's a massive privilege. Because, of course, in the city, it's more difficult because you have the city lights that overshadow the night sky in terms of intensity.
Yeah.
So it is a privilege to live in a place where you can.
Mm. I remember the first time when I slept on a beach and it was full moon. And I was shocked on how bright the full moon is. I couldn't sleep. It was so bright. I could see the shadows wandering, and the light was so bright I couldn't close my eyes for a minute.
Yes.
And I was really stunned. I thought, like, how did I never realize how bright it is? Yes. Because if you're in a building and you're sleeping, you just close the windows and you will not really see it. But sleeping outside in nature and realizing it's as bright as it is during the day, it's crazy. And everything yes. looks so sharp, and you have intense shadows from the moon. And maybe it's a stupid thing to just realize it, but I had to have this experience of sleeping outside in nature with, like, no shelter to realize how intense nature is.
It is. Sometimes it's amazing to think how much the Industrial Revolution changed our relationship with nature.
Yeah, I was just thinking that we would live a totally different life.
Yeah.
If we wouldn't have lights and electricity and all of this thing.
Exactly.
It totally disconnects us.
Yep. And I suppose that people used to watch the night sky at night like we watch movies.
Mm.
And I imagine that it would tell them stories.
Mm.
Because when you hear the names of the constellations, let's say the constellation of Virgo, because it isn't just a zodiac sign.
Mm.
Virgo is a constellation of stars.
Mm.
And we pick the 12 constellations that we see consistently occupying the night sky in a line and rotating. Well, if you look at the constellation of Virgo as a group of stars, you really have to use your imagination to figure out, why did this remind them of a virgin? Why did this group of whatever number of stars, 7, 8 stars that you can see, how did they figure out that, why did they give it the name, a name? Or Leo, why is that a lion? And the other one, why is that, whatever it is, a scorpion? It's because they told stories. Stories that related to the seasons and to their experiences during the seasons, and began to notice and feel a correlation with the heavens. And then they would tell myths. In other words, more complicated stories in which various constellations would play the part of the hero and heroine, and mundane things would happen that held some value or meaning that was, in their point of view, universal.
Mm.
And so myths emerged, and they became archetypal in the sense that no matter where you are in the world, people tell the same stories.
Mm.
Even though they could never have communicated the things one to the other. Similarity between myths is amazing.
Mm.
And then we had the Industrial Revolution that made us lose touch with the night sky. And everything became so much more focused on the day. The light became important. The night was just a waste of time.
Mm.
Only good for sleeping. For being unconscious. And instead, during the day, the sun clarifies everything that is close. We see everything around us so much more clearly.
Yeah.
But we don't see the stars during the day. At night, we don't see everything around us so clearly, but we see the cosmos. And to me, it's as if the night gives us the context in which we exist. In other words, the larger picture of who we are, the grandness of things, the infinite mystery that surrounds us. And during the day, instead, we are very Virgo-ishly looking after the details of everyday life, because that's what the light is shining on, the details, the things around us. Without the night, we forget the meaning, though, the context in which we do this. So I feel that for all the things we gained in the Industrial with the Industrial Revolution, we certainly lost our sense of connectedness to the universe and the cosmos and our greater selves, where we come from.
It's such a beautiful picture. And also I'm thinking, looking back at what we talked about, the cycles, natural cycles, we also probably lost touch to our cycles in this period, because I don't know, when there was no light, stuff like this, you wouldn't even think about being productive at 10 p.m. You know? Winter was such a different time with all the darkness and the cold. And you wouldn't expect yourself to be productive in the same way in winter that you would be in summer.
Correct.
And now every day seems to be the same, because we can make every day look the same.
Yeah.
But it will never feel the same.
Yeah. Because we've made optimizing profits the most important thing in the world. We even changed the clocks to get to save 1 hour of daylight in the summer so we can work 1 hour more. Yeah, it's insane. It's insane.
I sometimes think how different we would live if we wouldn't know all of these things, if we wouldn't know what exact time it is. Or we had this situation at the last full moon, you know, we visited our friend Mehdi, and I asked him how old he was. And he said, I'm 50-something. And I had to think about this so much, because I thought, if you would not define your age to the exact year, and you would just say, I'm 30-something, or not even that, you know, if we wouldn't even know our age, if we wouldn't know how old we are, what would it change in our life? For me, as a woman, I'm a woman in, like, her 30s. You know how much I think about my age? Like, oh my God, I'm turning 40 in a few years. I have to make decisions. Do I want to have kids? You know, stuff like this.
Yeah.
And I know there's a biological reason for it. But do I ever think about how does my body feel? No, I'm thinking about my age, you know? And I thought about how would our life be changed if we wouldn't know how old we are? Yeah. If we would only know how do we feel? How do we mentally feel? How do we physically feel?
Yep.
It would change everything. And Absolutely. If we also wouldn't know how old other people are. I mean, of course, you can tell from how they look, but you can never tell exactly. And people can be the same age and look so differently.
And we define ourselves and expect and not expect certain things of ourselves because of the concept we have about our age.
I remember when I turned 30. I never had a big issue with turning 30. Like, I was looking forward to it. I was super neutral about it. And then I turned 30. And a few months later, I got this, like, big crisis. And I couldn't really tell where it came from. But then I looked deeper into it. And I talked to some friend about it. And I realized that when I was in my late 20s, I compared myself to when I was in my early 20s. And I thought, like, oh my God, I reached so much. I'm, like, in such a good place for my age. It's amazing. When I was 22, I was, like, at university, a baby. I didn't know shit. And now I'm, like, 29, and look at me now. And then I turned 30. And by the day I turned 30, I sort of changed the box I was living in and comparing myself to people that were close to their 40s. And I was like, what? You guys own houses? What? Like, you have families? You get married? Like, oh my God, I don't know shit. Like, I felt like a complete baby. I felt so useless. I was like, I'm never gonna manage to be there in 10 years. Like, not gonna happen. Oh my God. And I get so self-conscious about myself.
Yeah.
until I realized, oh my God, it's like I haven't changed. It's just a day has passed and I turned 30. But I didn't compare myself to a 39-year-old when I was 29, and I shouldn't do it when I'm 30. It has nothing to do. Everyone has their own path. Everyone has their own, I don't know, speed, you know? Like, it's not about this, but just by turning 30, and I didn't expect it because I was so chill about this day. I didn't expect me to have this issue, but it showed up, and then I worked through it and it disappeared. But still, I think it would be such a great relief if I wouldn't know how old I am.
Yeah. Well, I told you my story of how almost 2 years ago now, I fell in love. And damn, that wasn't supposed to happen, because in my mind, I was, 67? And it just doesn't happen at 67. I thought I've closed with that chapter. I'm now looking forward to, you know, a nice quiet life of internal meditation and... I don't know how to describe it to you, but I was all set for a kind of quiet monastic approach to.
So you were life. Done with love for this life?
Yeah, I really didn't think I had it in me in any which way, neither physically nor emotionally nor mentally. And then this freaking thing just happened, and just it was revolutionary. But at the deepest levels, what it showed me was, with a tremendous sense of excitement, I realized, my God, Marco, not only are you still alive, you're still capable of this, you know. Your heart is longing for expansion, not for, you're not dying at all, you know. Look, feel. Yeah, and it was my mental image of, concept of what my age was.
Such a limit.
Totally. So now instead, I think I'm like the hottest thing since powdered milk. Not quite, but it has reawakened all sorts of possibilities that I didn't even consider before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember when I recently told you the story about this psychotherapist that I really like? His name is Irvin Yalom, and I did some research on him because I read some books
He wrote. I know him.
You know him?
Yes.
And I told you the story that I did some research about him, and I read, he's 94, and I read, no, he's 95 now, but I read that he got married last year, and that he got married at 94, and it shaked all my concepts. In the beginning, I was a bit shocked because he used to be married for such a long time until his first wife died. But then, sort of, and this is so, it's sad for me to realize that, but I had all these limitations of, if your wife dies when you're 90, this was it, you know?
Suck it
like
up.
You're not gonna be in love again, like, whatever. And then realizing he fell in love again and he got married at age 94, it was, this opened such a big space in my head of what is possible in terms of love.
Yes, yes.
And that we're never too old for it. And I mean, sure, you have to be in a mentally and physically and whatever situation where you can live like that. But if you are, then anything is possible. And I would love to talk to him about it, you know, and know how this feels and what it feels to be newly in love at 94, and that's so interesting. But just the fact that it happened and that he got married is like, it shaked all my concepts, and it killed so many of my limitations in the best possible way. And now looking at you, you know, you're like 30 years away from his age now.
Yeah.
And imagine you would still have these limitations, which would mean that maybe you're living for 30 years that where you could fall in love
30 times.
Yeah. Or get married 5 more times.
At
who knows? You know?
16 babies.
And what you think? No, I'm already in my late 60s. This chapter is over for me.
Yeah.
What a stupid limitation.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. But it's amazing, you had told me the story, and I remember being amazed by the story when you told me the first time, but I don't think you told me the name.
Yeah, maybe I didn't.
And I recognize it.
Yeah.
I read at least one of his books.
Yeah, he has amazing books.
Yeah. And just completely gobbled it up. It was powerful. I can't remember the name. I'll have to look him up.
Yeah. He has amazing books, and I even watched a movie about his life, and yeah, it's great. And he's the one, yeah.
Just surprising that we know the same psychotherapist.
Yeah, but he's very well known.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he has books in so many languages. I wrote all of his books in German. This was just the happiest thing for me to realize this. Sometimes it's so good. You read one piece of information and it changes everything you think about a certain topic. You know, it's so powerful.
Yeah.
And just, it sometimes just needs one person who does something.
Yeah.
And it opens the space for everyone to do the same. Because it's such an inspiration.
Which reminds me, what are you doing tonight?
I don't know.
Should we go for a burger?
Oh, we can. Yeah, that would be great.
Okay.
Yum. Yeah, that's beautiful. Mm.
I don't know why it reminded me of a burger. But
I don't see that.
Don't argue with inspiration. Oh, yeah. I'm not sure if it was last night. I think it was last night that I thought of it, of painting you. So I want to take four pics because I asked you if you don't mind me painting you, and then you can take the
painting. I would love that.
To Finland.
Wow.
For your house. Yeah.
That's the most beautiful gift. When I read your message about this, I was like, oh my God, he wants to paint me.
I do.
That's so beautiful. Thank you so much.
And so, mustn't forget to take some pictures.
Yes, let's do it.
Before we go for a burger.
Yeah.
And while the light is still.
Yes. Yeah. Let's take pictures. Wow. That's so beautiful.
Well, I thought about it. This is going to be your first house.
Yes.
That's a big deal.
It is. It also feels like a big deal.
Yeah.
And I'm also thinking, like, how do I want to start this chapter? Like, what does it need for a good start?
Yeah.
I have some ideas already, but it really is a big and powerful change. And today I did a bit of reflection, because I think I need a lot of reflection before I start this new chapter after, yeah, finishing my travels. I've been traveling for 5.5 years. That's such a long time. And then I was thinking, if now moving into an apartment. And I had this moment today where I was sitting there and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have a kitchen. I want to bake bread and I want to cook every day, you know, all these things. And 5.5 years ago, if you would have asked me, I would have thought, oh, this is the most boring thing you can imagine, you know, like living in a house, really, and cooking and baking and stuff. And today it felt like, this is the greatest thing and I can't wait for it. And I thought, like, is this doing a step back from having this wild and free life, traveling the world, you know, not being settled anywhere? But then I realized, like, no, it's not a step back. It's a step forward. It's the next chapter. And because I've been traveling for 5.5 years and all the people I met and all the inspiration I got and all the places I've seen and everything I've experienced about myself, moving into this new chapter will be a totally different chapter than anything I could have started without this experience.
Of course.
So I really made peace with my idea of settling now and doing all the things that I used to hate. You know, when I was still living in Germany before I started traveling, I was living for like a year. I was living in this house a bit outside of Munich with like these typical German neighbors that would talk to you about how you cut your grass in the garden in the wrong way and stuff like this, you know? It was the whole package. And I was, like, so fed up. I was like, I hate this shit. Never gonna do it again. Yeah. And now I'm doing it again. But as a new person and with a lot of new insights, and I can't wait.
With reindeer in the garden.
Yeah. Hopefully, yeah.
Well, speaking of seasons and naturally changing and growing, that's an example of it, you know. Mm. What would have sounded unwelcome 2 years ago, in the right moment, it totally has its place and it's welcomed, you know. Being in a home, in your own house, nesting, and being comfortable.
Mm.
You mentioned not having to move all your belongings every time you go from one place to the next.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to take the minimum required. Yeah, it has its advantages, having a home base.
Yeah.
And also, I hate to tell you this, but when birds nest, it often heralds other changes that, you know, to do with companionship and sharing that nest and things that you haven't done yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So who knows? That's why life is grand. Because we don't know.
And I think this is interesting, that how older you get, not that I'm super old, but how older you get, the more you realize everything is just a phase. Because when I was younger, everything I did was so absolute, you know? Like, everything I did was like, oh, I like this, I'm going to do this forever.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm in a space where I realize I will probably not do anything forever. All the things I'm doing will just be a phase. And that's beautiful. So I'm excited to see how long this will last.
The one thing you can be sure is if you live every phase to its full, to the full, it naturally paves and opens a way to the next. And if you live that to the full, without abortions and things, but just learn 100% of what it has to offer, then at the right time, the next door opens and you're into a new phase.
Mm.
Without needing to plan it out ahead. It just happens.
So beautiful.
Lots of blessings to you.
Thank you. Thank you for the conversation again. That was beautiful. Thank you for sharing so much knowledge about astrology. I think that's so interesting for a lot of people.
And thank you for sharing yourself.
Thank you so much for being here, for listening, for sharing this space with us. May these conversations remind you to open yourself to people who are different from you and to discover what you can learn from them. We'd love to hear your thoughts and reflections. Feel free to share them with us. Check the show notes for more about us and join us again for the next conversation.